Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast, episode 69. We tried to get a four-man weave going with Neil, Tron, and Randy. Randy's coaching a basketball game right now, so we're stuck with just Neil, Tron, and Freddie. Freddie's in the background, kind of taking a nap, I think. Tron, is he rolling around? What's going on?
We just fed him. Alex out of town. I just fed him. It's like a brave new world over here, man.
Neil, you haven't been on the pod in like years, I'm afraid of this. But no, it's not. I guess you did one with the Tour Junkies, didn't you?
I did. I hosted one with the Tour Junkies with Tron. But yeah, you know, long-time listener, maybe second-time caller. Happy to be back.
The feedback
exciting
on the
tournament today.
On your trap draw appearance is strong to quite strong. People are demanding another trap draw appearance, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I have to get some more material, so may have to make a return visit to the Chateau Relaxo. Also planning to go down to L.A. and see T4, which is kind of a satellite office of the Chateau Relaxo. He's got Hue Lights down there as well. As he calls himself, he's just a little boy with a lot of little toys down there. So if I do, I would hope I'd play a little bit of golf, and maybe we can get another trap draw story time with NG Shoe.
If you guys haven't, make sure you're subscribed to the Trap Draw podcast. It's an episode with Neil did with the guys back in December, and it's fantastic. It's awesome stories. But we're recording this. It's after midnight for me. Final putt just dropped. DJ just won another event, WGC.
Bomb threat.
Unbelievable.
Bomb threat.
He cut the cord on the ROM threat that tried to invade it, and DJ kind of running away now with number one ranking. What are your guys' overall thoughts on the week?
I thought it was awesome, man. I thought Mexico was a rousing success. Crowds were awesome. Mickelson was like performance art from Mickelson the whole week. I heard a little bit of flack from Andy from Fried Egg. He was just lighting my texts up with complaints about the foliage on the golf course. Like, just bitching about width and width and angles and strategic golf. So I do think they need to do a little bit of tree trimming down there. But for the most part, I thought it was an awesome event. I mean, especially for a first time venue. Thumbs up. Two thumbs up from Tron.
I kind of liked the narrow fairways. I thought that they looked pretty cool on TV. I understand where Andy's coming from, but seeing those guys try to hit it down shoots like that is awesome. And then seeing some of them like Mickelson and end up over in the trees. Gotta love that. Big takeaway for me, really liked the young Euro crop showing up on the leaderboard between Peters, this guy Tommy Fleetwood, big fan, tremendous lettuce. So excited to see those guys continue to play over here on the side of the pond. But DJ, obviously, taking care of business. And if I hear that he's unflappable one more time, though, I might put the broadcast on mute. I don't know if it's
I think that's just code for like him being dumb. Like, that's just like the nice way of them saying like, oh, like DJ's unflappable. Like, yeah.
I don't think that's the word for it.
Have you seen the clip though of the Phil Faraday coming up where Phil says like, to be good at golf, you either have to be really smart or really dumb. Like, there's 99% chance he's talking about DJ, right?
Yeah.
I thought the course was a refreshing change from just kind of the course we see every week, but it was really interesting that the leaderboard that came out of this course. Like, I wouldn't have expected like Rory, JT, DJ, and Rom, like guys known as bombers, to have had this kind of course fit their style. But it was just weird. I felt like the scores probably should have been lower, but it kind of played firm and fast. Like, what are the yardage do we think it played to with the altitude? It was only 7,200 yards plus a 15% altitude. Wasn't it essentially playing like a 6,200 yard course?
But I think part of that, though, was you've got, A, it was playing firm and fast.
Yeah.
So like the greens were like, that was my big takeaway as far as the setup was, the greens were so firm. It was awesome. But I mean, I guess to a certain extent, the altitude, the ball doesn't spin as much either, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, guys are going to hit it straighter. The guys that hit it longer are going to hit it straighter than they typically do as well. So the guys that typically drive the ball well are, I think, have a distinct advantage here. You know, I mean, other than maybe, I mean, who wasn't a bomber that was on the leaderboard?
Who's not a bomber anymore, though, on this tour?
That's true. Yeah, that's
Ross
true as
Fisher,
well.
I don't think he moves at that. Snedeker's not really necessarily a bomber, I wouldn't say.
Yeah.
But so what? Saturday was supposedly the most epic day like of Phil Magic ever seen. I missed all of Saturday. What basically happened on Saturday?
What didn't happen?
The guy was just getting out of jail. I mean, jail. Like, you couldn't even see him a couple times in the trees. And I mean, it was, I don't know. He wasn't.
You couldn't have scripted it anymore, Phil. Like, it was amazing. Just, like, peak Phil. Like, and then, like, there were certain times where he was in the jungle and, like, they couldn't even pick him up on camera and Slugger White would walk over. I mean, it was nuts. And then he made par. Like, it was out of control.
How did he shoot 68? I'm just seeing this now. I mean, I'm still trying to piece all this together. Rom, a lot of people are really getting really pumped up about Rom. We're all in on this, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I love the swing, man. The way he drops his elbow. Very Sergio-esque, the Spaniards. I don't know. I know Todd, I know you're all about him, Ronald, so. But I like Rom a lot.
He's the Rom threat. He's the conquistador. He likes beer, pizza, chicks with big boobs. That's about as American as it gets.
Phil's brother is his agent. He quit the head coach at Arizona State, and now he's just his agent. Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct. Yeah. He quit to be his agent.
That's a power move.
It looks like a very good decision at this point. My my buddy Toomer always used to joke about how Sergio, like, until his like early 30s, was called the young Spaniard, and I actually laughed out loud when Faraday called Rom the young Spaniard. Now the torch has officially been passed to Rom as the young Spaniard.
I just think, I mean, there's so many good gladiator parallels between Rom and, I don't know, anything Spaniard, but he's also from the Basque country, right? So he's got a little bit of separatism in his background, you know.
I'd love for him to wear. He should wear the armor with the horses, Argento, and I can't remember what the other one is, but we certainly call him Spaniard.
That's a deep pull.
Yeah, that was a stretch alert for sure.
Jack Reacher.
This didn't feel enough like a WGC, and I think I'm just now figuring out why. It didn't feel the same without Tongchai Jaidi finishing T57 and never being in contention.
That was the big takeaway for me today. It was like Ross Fisher just stacking OWGR points. It was like a mad dash at the end there. Like, all right, I don't have a chance to win, but I can lock up a top 50 world ranking here for the next 18 months, basically.
Well, hey, to go back to Fleetwood, though, so he beat DJ in Abu Dhabi, right, by one stroke, and then they just flipped spots here in this one. And Abu Dhabi, that's an HSBC, is that? Or
no, Abu Dhabi's the like the Euro Tour.
The Euro Tour,
like,
okay.
Yeah, that's like one of their flagship events over there.
Okay, but I mean, I think if we're going to talk about young like studs, like Rom for sure, but this guy was, I mean, obviously bombing the ball, but I think he hit an iron on one of the par fives on the back and just, I mean, what a shot. Took it over the trees, cut it. Like, I don't know, guys. I'm in on Fleetwood. He might have some pop.
Fleetwood Mac guy.
Yeah.
If you're a British guy, like playing in WGCs, like a good British player, and you don't have bad teeth, like get out of here. Like that's how I judge my British golfers.
They have to have bad teeth.
Yeah. For sure.
So Justin Rose.
Well, there were three of them up on the leaderboard. There was Hatton too, right? And then
and Westwood. Ross, I mean, he's English, and but Westwood. he ejected hard.
Yeah, he wasn't on the final leaderboard there at all.
How many times in a big event have we seen Lee Westwood tee off in the final group and then implode in the first few holes, and then you see him on the on the 18th green? It's like, well, this just wasn't Lee Westwood's day.
Yep. 7-8.
This wasn't his day, but you know,
it's like the mini Camilo.
That is Westwood. Like he's there. Be called a Westwood at this
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it's like the Westwood. Yeah,
I got mad respect for Westwood though. I mean, longevity wise. He's still doing it. Like, yeah, he ejects. Like, Ryder Cup didn't go well for him, but I mean, still, the dude's—he was a thoroughbred. He has been for years.
I think he's 56 or something. WGC event, like that, just blows my mind.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
So many OWGR points.
I was gonna say, I wonder how many official World Golf Ranking points he's earned in those events. But can we talk about the sauce that JT sprayed on Sunday at Tron. I don't think you're a fan of it.
No, it was just so...
Yeah, Tron.
Man. Like, his dad, I guarantee you his dad's going to have a stern lecture for him. Like, his dad being a golf pro and all that. Like, that was... It was too much.
Too far.
It was too much. Like, I liked the premature club release. Like, that's my favorite thing in the world. So I had no problem. Even if he would have hit that fan, I would have had no problem with that. It was... It's like when he did it, like, six holes in a row, and then... That spike mark blame that he did was like totally over the top.
That was exaggerated, but that's what you love about it. The really exaggerated the tour sauce moves are what makes it so great. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, but you don't want it to be a tantrum, you know? Like you don't want it to be.
It's got to be in the moment, like not as part of a larger like, man, things aren't going my way today. Like I'm bitching about it versus like it's got to be in the moment unto itself kind of thing. If that makes sense.
I will say this though: he had a tour sauce week because he threw that little fishing move a couple days ago.
That was strong.
And I mean, that was strong. Like that's good stuff, right? I'd love to put it on a t-shirt, but I don't think we can do that justice, right?
Well, I don't think people really heard what he dropped before that happened. So he hit like that wedge on 18. He twirled it and then gave it like a get in that hole, Bow, like with a huge Southern accent to it. Like the cameras barely picked up on it. I should have put the video.
And then
he
spun it.
He twirled it and then said get in that hole, Bow. And then that's when he did, and after that it landed, that's when he did the fisherman reel thing. It was one of the saucier moments.
But did
moments
he do the
year.
Fisherman reel while the ball was spinning, like backspinning on the green?
No, it had already stopped. I think at that point, it was already in there tight. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, I don't want to bite the hand that feeds here. But
he laid up today. Just, like we're allowed to be at least a little critical of him if it was pretty
have to be.
Yeah, it was a tough layup. But I mean, come on. Whatever he's the ambassador, but yeah, I made the joke today. I feel like he's spying on the Russians, or he's spying for the Russians.
But. I'd say and you were talking about it earlier. Like there's so many huge hops on those greens where those guys would throw a dart and the ball would bounce like 8 feet up and then roll off the back. Like, that's got to be like really frustrating for those guys. You know when they can't stuff the pinata.
That adds so much more nuance to it, though. Like every tournament's like a dart throw.
It does. I love it. Watch it.
For sure. Yeah.
And it helped protect the course, too, because that was going to be just a massive.
It definitely did. Yeah, they were hitting from like 80 yards out. You know, they were not getting wedges that close, which was cool to see.
God, I'm about to just throw out a tweet that's going to get me in trouble. But
you don't have to do this.
I want to.
Any other big takeaways from the week? Where's Johnny Miller this week?
I got a takeaway before we go to Johnny Miller. The Marshalls were phenomenal.
Yes!
They were engaged.
And I saw a little bit of action on Twitter earlier, but like I just noticed it watching. They were using the quiet paddles to get the fans hyped. Like, please, more of that. That was awesome. Like, they're in the background pumping the crowd up. Like, I was like, that we need more of that in the States. And I thought the crowds were good. There are tons of cell phones out there. Like every time there was you could get a look at the crowd behind, DJ putting or whatever. Like everybody had their cell phone out filming, which was kind of, surprised me. But otherwise, like I thought the crowds were great. They looked like they were having a ton of fun out there. And like, how about the corporate tents or the scene on 17? Like that hole was lit too. So yeah, I would say that was a takeaway for me.
I would keep this event there. I think, having, I get so frustrated when I tune into a WGC and like even Doral. I mean, Doral was the epitome of this, but the one in Shanghai, Firestone's whatever because it's in Ohio. But like when you tune into a tournament that's supposed to be a big tournament and it's just totally flat and the crowd is flat and there's nobody out there because they're charging a ton of money for the tickets. Like this felt like the opposite of that. This felt like a big event. You know?
It did.
Yeah. So that's as high of a compliment as I can give a tournament.
It felt like a big event. How about on 18? Yeah. Phil walking off 18, they're chanting, I think they were chanting Phil. I don't even know. Maybe they were chanting something in Spanish. But they were chanting and in unison, which was awesome.
You could see how much it meant to the people there too. Like they were legitimately excited. Like Phil gave us young girl a ball at some point today, during the round, and her jaw just dropped. Like she was so excited. And the only drawback I could say of the fans is on the PGA Tour Instagram story this week, they were quizzing a bunch of kids on who their favorite player was, and one kid said that his favorite player was Jim Furyk. So. not the most educated fans down there, but no, that, I thought it was great to have a WGC that was not outside the U.S. yet, within our time zone period, and not in Korea or in China or something like that, where we're just not going to tune into it. So the WGCs need to be. There should not be three WGCs in the U.S. every year. So I'm all for playing one in Mexico.
And I think they're Latin America. I mean, I'm all for more tournaments. Down there, it makes sense to me.
What about a WGC in South Africa? Would people show up to that? Probably not, would they?
They have some big. I mean, they have the Chwane Open there this week. Events.
I just remember I read a Golf Digest South Africa story about, by my friend Barry Havanga wrote it about. They had 8,000 fans at the South African Open last year, and then Rory came this year, and they had 28,000. The fans are also nuts down there. And if a huge field showed up for that event, if a huge field went down to South Africa, the fans would come out in doves for that. So,
I think they've always had that big event, that Sun City event, the $1 million one. They always had a big turnout for that. I'm all for variety. Give us variety. Give me less Firestone and Doral.
North of the border, too. Right? I know the Champions Tour and I think the LPGA play stuff in Vancouver area, British Columbia. And Tron, the golf up there we played last summer, that was unbelievable. I don't know. I'm with you, though. I think outside the U.S., if it's not a, for a WGC, makes a ton of sense.
It's a world golf championship.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, boys, anything else from the week that we missed?
I wanted to give a shout-out to NB Park. I think she missed, one fairway this week. And then right after I saw that, they put up a stat from Phil, and it was Phil's missed, 28 of 37 fairways in the last, 3 days. I was damn, that's a different ball game, just totally different styles of golf. So
I'd like to shout out Thomas Peters, his outfit, murdered out black. Everybody's going colorful. I liked his kind of the toned down black Pantones.
No, he was wearing the same thing as Ross Fisher, who looked like he was a pro-am contestant.
I can't wait to see what wardrobe you've got lined up for England, Tron. It better be on point. That's all I'm saying.
I know. It's got to be on point.
Real.
You put a lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know what a good look is anymore. I really don't.
I don't even know what a good look
either.
Is. I think we're post-fashion. We're post-pop. We're post-fashion. We're post-glamour. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I have up my sleeve.
Unless you look like Morgan Hoffman, you're just screwed. Neil, you want to give us a little merch update?
Yeah, for sure. So we're doing some big things in the pro shop here coming up this month. Hats, some new hats will be in, and then we're redoing some of the t-shirts. So stay tuned on that. Small shop, big ideas, excited about it.
Tron, anything else to add?
Not really. Just shout out to all the people in Mexico, man. Great stuff. Great week.
Unbelievable season so far. Seriously.
Yeah. What do we have next week? What do we got going on next week?
Valspar.
We got Valspar next week. That's like the most underrated event of the year.
Snake Pit, baby.
I thought I saw a tweet or something. There's a big name that's not playing this week, and I don't remember who it was. Somebody. It's not Spieth, is it? No, Spieth's playing.
This course is like right up Spieth's alley.
Somebody's skipping this week that was kind of surprising.
Sully, I want to talk about. I got a couple things here, actually.
Yeah.
A, they've been showing that Stella Artois water commercial with Matt Damon. And like I'm gonna make a video with your face in it for you like carrying Ricky's water, the water crisis, ending the water crisis. But also, I forgot what I was gonna say.
You won't do it.
I had another take. Hold on. I was gonna talk about Ricky, I want to talk about Patrick Reed. What's the deal?
I don't know, man. He does this
quickly, becoming a forgotten man.
But players have like up and downs. Like you, every time somebody has like a 3-week bad stretch, you say that they're a forgotten man. You have also said that about Fowler at one point this season. Like, I'm not that worried about Reed.
He didn't even play the West Coast Swing. Reed. All right, so Reed's never finished top 10 in a major.
Correct.
That's what gets me, man. I can't.
He's 25.
I can't sleep
isn't
on
he?
That. I can't sleep on that.
Not on my watch. Isn't he like 25? I'm not worried about it. He's got time. He's born in 1990. Yeah, he's 26 years old. He's gonna have some solid finishes.
Younger than Neil. That's crazy. Neil, are you the roast of my swing this week?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I am. So we got a couple of options, a couple of nominees from the archives. But yes, I am, and I'm looking forward to getting absolutely napalmed by the Twitter community.
Awesome response nation this week.
R.I.P. Randy.
Oh my God, the responses were incredible. That was way too much.
R.I.P. Randy and R.I.P. Tron, because I have like 3 or 4 other videos where your thumb is in the camera, like you're a horrible filmer.
I can't wait Tron's when he's up next week. I think when people are gonna come, they're gonna come fire, and I can't wait. But if you haven't seen that, check it out.
I think I got
the responses.
Couple good ones in the archives of Tronald McDonald. And a couple of solid outfits.
Yes.
Solid good outfits, stuff. Really?
Yeah, I think so. You had a sweater look going on at Sweetens Cove back in the day that is...
Oh, my posture was so bad.
There. Yeah, I mean, it might be a good one.
I'm pre-rotted in my back, Ken Duke. Like, I have scoliosis.
it lacks pop. Your spine angle lacks a significant pop.
I don't think I had a spine angle. I think it's like a spine, like, curvature, you know? So.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Anyway.
All right, boys.
So you got Hagee on tap here?
Yeah. Yep, we're going to cut this. Now we wanted to just, we've got an interview coming up here with Brandon Hagee. It's only about 20 minutes long. We wanted to share some thoughts from the WGC before we got to that. And so we'll cut to that now. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll be back next. I think next week's going to be a really good one if it all works out. So Tron, Neil, thanks for jumping on as well.
Cool.
Thanks, Sally.
Good stuff in the hopper. Thanks, Sally.
See you guys. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I'm Chris Solomon, a landmark day here in the No Laying Up Podcast. Kyle Porter and I have been following this guy for what seems like the better part of a decade now, first time on the podcast, Brandon Hagee. Brandon, do you kind of understand where the obsession for Porter and I comes from, or are you like completely clueless at this point?
Well, I know I hit the ball a decent ways, and I don't lay up that often, so I can kind of put two and two together.
That's actually all the criteria that we're looking for, actually. So what's going on in your world today?
Nothing much. Just in Scottsdale, Arizona. I moved here in December, joined Whisper Rock, and it's one of the best places to practice. Excuse me, a ton of tour guys and incredible facility, so I'm just working away at the game.
Does the Whisper Rock, like the roster out there, will you put that up against any of the Florida clubs, or what would you say is like the strongest club?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be at least in the top five, you know, around the country in terms of just number of tour players that are out here, and then not only the tour players, but the AMs out here too are pretty filthy, so...
I read something somewhere that like there's something like 45 members or something ridiculous that are better than scratch players out there. Do you believe that?
I could believe that. The first guy that I played with beat me. He's called the assassin out here. So he's been notorious for taking some money from the pros. So. Yeah, it's a super competitive environment out here. You know, that's one of the main reasons I moved to Arizona, and in this spot in particular, was I really felt like I could improve my game a ton. So,
man, I can't think of a better nickname or a better thing to be known for than to be an amateur out there taking money from the pros. But So I'm least familiar with your background. Some of our listeners might not be, despite the fact you've been mentioned on this podcast many times. But could you give us a quick summary of your background, how you got to where you are currently? You're not officially a rookie on the PGA Tour, though this is your first time with full status on the tour, as I understand it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's all about, to be honest. I'm a pseudo rookie, I guess we'll go with that.
So you had like 8 starts, I think, in 2015, so that ruined your rookie status or something like that, and then you played last year full-time on the web tour, correct?
Correct. So, yeah, I went to Cal, or known as UC Berkeley in academic circles, up in the Bay Area. Was there 5 years, 3-time All-American there, and then I missed at second stage of Q school my first go out, but then I was able that year to get a bunch of exemptions, like you said, which is actually really helpful for this year, just getting all that experience and feeling a little bit more comfortable on tour. And then I played on the web tour last year, kind of had to play my way into getting in starts. I only had conditional status to start the year on the web tour, and was able to get a sponsor invited into an event early in the year and made a check there. That kind of got me off and running. And then I had a bunch of top 5 finishes and was able to finish in the top 25 on that tour. So, yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, you know, last year, you know, not this December, but last December, if you had told me I was going to be on tour based off of the status I had on web tour, I would have been, you know, super stoked about that. So, it's been good.
Do you? A lot of the guys I talk to really speak very highly about their time on the web tour, saying it teaches them rhythm, it teaches them, you know, a different kind of competitiveness and a grinding factor. Was your overall web experience like that? Do you speak highly as well of your web.com experience?
Yeah, it's super well run. There's a lot of really good golfers on that tour. It's kind of an interesting combination of, you know, young, fresh out of college guys, and there's a few veteran guys in there, PGA Tour winners, major champions. I mean, it's an interesting group of players, but you have to play at a high level. I mean, I've heard a bunch of people say that, you know, making cuts on the web tour is almost the hardest out there because, you know, the cuts are like 5-6 under par every week. But it's a great proving ground, and that was really the first time in my career I've played, you know, 7-8 tournaments in a row. I kind of had to because I was working towards my card, and I never played that much golf in a row. So that was a good learning experience.
Coming from the web tour, you have now full status on the tour, but if I'm reading it right, you finished 19th on the money list last year, so you don't have full priority, or you're a bit down on the priority list. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, so coming off the web tour, it's interesting. We kind of have our own category. There's 50 of us or so in that category. And, you know, we're all competing against each other to get in kind of the more high-profile events. So it's kind of, I guess, you could look at it as kind of like a 3-4 card. Because, you know, especially the first part of the year, there's a bunch of tournaments that we're not getting in. You know, we're not getting all the WGCs. Riviera, Waste Management, you know, Valspar next week, I probably won't get in the field. I think I'm like maybe 10 out, and I'm 24th in the category. So it's pretty competitive to get into some of these events. I've been fortunate to snag a few sponsor invites here and there this year, which has been good. Like I think last week I got a sponsor invite and I would have finished first alternate and had a good week. So it kind of shows you how important starts are, especially out of our category.
Do you, once you have your, I guess, a full-time member, do they limit how many sponsors exemptions you can take?
No. So once you're a full-time member, you can, you know, kind of get as many as you want. So I've put in the work, and I've wrote letters, called tournament directors. I've had various connections here and there, but I've really worked towards trying to secure those spots.
In 2015, you got that initial experience. You got a lot of sponsors exemptions. You went down to the Web Tour. Now you're back PGA Tour. What's the biggest difference in your day-to-day life, your PGA Tour life versus your Web.com Tour life? Do you notice a huge difference in, like, courtesy cars and just the way things are handled? And is it something like, once you've experienced the tour life, you never want to do the Web Tour again?
No, I think the biggest difference is probably just the overwhelming support from all angles on the PGA Tour. When you show up, you got the courtesy car desk at the airport, they hand you your keys, you jump in your courtesy car, you go to the course, there's always a locker room, there's always a locker room attendant, the locker room is filled with, everything you can think of, food, everything. I would say probably, obviously the stage is bigger, everything is just bigger, all the hospitality tents and the crowds, all that is a little different. But in terms of the day-to-day routine, my routine is almost exactly the same on the, on the PGA Tour as it was on the Web Tour. I've tried to keep that pretty consistent. And I think that's part of as a rookie, getting a feel for what works for you is really important. And that's why the Web Tour helps with that, is you really do start to get a feel for what works, multiple weeks in a row, how often are you in the gym, when are you getting to the course, afternoon tea time, when are you waking up? I mean, all these things you want to try and keep as consistent as possible. And the Web Tour is a great testing ground for that.
Without having the full status, are you, any tournament that you are able to get in, are you saying yes? Or are there still are you still making some selections in your schedule?
Well, yeah, I mean, the first part of the year, I'm just playing in whatever I get in.
Yeah.
I'll hopefully work to a point where I can take a few tournaments off down the stretch later in the year. Because basically after the players, we start getting in most of the tournaments. Then there'll be quite a few in a row. At that point, I'd like to maybe, take some off when I can. That would be good.
Putting the vibe and the life part aside of the differences between web and tour, what's the biggest difference from a golf perspective? Like, I know you, again, like I said, you've been out there in 2015. You've seen what tour events are like. You've played a lot with a lot of these players. But is there a skill that gets tested on these PGA Tour courses that maybe wasn't highlighted as much on the Web Tour? And has there been like a moment where you see a guy do something and you're like, whoa, I don't have that shot yet, or I need to improve on that?
I would just say there's more courses on the PGA Tour that are just significantly more penal, in terms of the ball striking, which kind of lends itself to just having to be mentally sharp, even more than on the Web Tour. The Web Tour has a lot of easy, there's some easy golf courses. Obviously there's some super low scores out there. But it seems like on the PGA Tour, if you mentally check out there, there's more severe consequences just because the courses are more difficult. And then also each shot, there's so many good players, and it's the top players in the world. Each shot is so much more important. So I just think that mentally it's maybe a little bit more taxing than the Web Tour. So I've really tried to work on that part of my game the last couple of years. So I think that's definitely helped.
Was the Honda that you recently had, was that your best finish so far on the PGA Tour?
No, I finished 14th in Mississippi. I think 2 years ago I finished 14th in Puerto Rico.
But yeah, it's one of my better finishes so far.
It's a big field there in Florida in this one. So, and that's a really tough golf course. What was it about that course that you felt kind of, other than the corner you could cut on 18 that we all saw, you at 348 yards or whatever it was, what was it about PGA National that suited you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a beast of a golf course. Mm-hmm. Ball striking has always been my strength, and I feel like it rewards some of my longer straight drives, more significantly than other venues. And I always felt like I've played better on more difficult golf courses. I think my length off the tee is just a bigger advantage in those scenarios. I was getting a chuckle from that drive on 18 because, you know, the guys following Fowler were freaking out over his drive, you know, in the last group. And I was like, well, that was a cute drive. You know, that was good.
Yeah. All right. Now we can get into the good stuff now then, because I think you were already on my radar back in 2015, and you played when you played in the U.S. Open, and I think you did kind of a running diary or something for golf.com. Where you had this quote that still stuck with me, where you said, you know, you played practice rounds with a bunch of guys. I don't remember everyone you played with, but you said DJ is the only guy you played with that can keep up with you off the tee. So it seems like you do take a lot of pride in how far you hit it. Is that fair to say?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's something I've been known for a long time. So I just kind of run with it for sure.
What is your swing speed measured at?
I don't know what it was last week. It's like mid 120s and right around 190 with the ball speed.
Have you always been like crazy long, and the rest of your game just kind of developed as you matured, or was length something you kind of developed later in your coming up as a golfer?
Yeah, I mean, I would say kind of my transition from high school. I mean, I was pretty long in high school. My transition from high school into college, you know, my freshman year and then into my redshirt year in college, so that's when I really started to pick up some length. I think I got a little bit bigger, and you know, just a little bit more developed technically. So I was able to kind of use that power more effectively.
So are you buying?
Yeah, it's always kind of been.
Sorry, are you buying into any of that, to like calling Justin Thomas pound for pound the longest guy out there, or you want a remeasurement of that?
Well, I really want to see if he's actually 145 pounds. I'm not too sure about that.
What do you weigh?
I'm 160.
Okay.
He doesn't seem that much smaller than me.
He has been, like, they've been citing him at 145 for like 3 years now. So I'm kind of with you there. We might need a remeasurement on that one, but
maybe he's just dieting. Maybe he's keeping it right at 145. I don't know.
I think he would probably like to get rid of that narrative as much as the rest of us would. But so you grew up in California, is that right?
Yeah, Westlake Village, which is right, Sherwood Country Club is my home club back in L.A., where Tiger had that event for a bunch of years.
Right, and how did you decide on going to Cal? Was there anywhere else that you had considered, or were you pretty dead set on that?
So my entire family actually went to USC.
Huh.
So I really wanted to go to SC. Cal was one of the first, like, the original schools that recruited me pretty hard and made it clear that they really wanted me. I just, with my background, I mean, literally, like, four of my cousins, grandpa, aunt, uncle, mom, dad, you know, my entire family went to SC. So that was kind of where I wanted to go. And at the last second, they said that they weren't going to have a spot for me. And so that kind of made it pretty easy for me. Cal, you know, I was pretty good student, so Cal had the academics and it was still in the Pac-12, so that was kind of a no-brainer at that point. But we did pretty well against SC for the next four or five years, I would say. So that definitely felt good.
Did you rub that in at all to your family, or were they kind of not as competitive on the SC versus Cal as a golf thing?
No, they would rub in the football stuff.
Yeah,
the golf stuff. There wasn't much to talk about on their end for a few years. So that was good. No, they were totally on board with me going to Cal, and so that was no big deal. If I had gone to UCLA, they might have disowned me. Probably.
Right, that would have been some problems. Has there been anyone out there that's seemingly kind of gone out of their way to show you the ropes out on the PGA Tour, or a friendship you've made in recent months that you didn't previously have?
Yeah, I would say James Hahn has been really cool with me. He played at Cal. I talk with him a lot about my decision to go to Arizona, because he did the same thing maybe 5 or 6 years ago, kind of right when he started to pick up, and he was really high on it. So I talk with him a lot. I've played practice rounds with him. I'm trying to think who else. Sean O'Hare has been really cool to me. And then just getting to know some of the Whisper Rock guys now. Graham Dillette, Scott Stallings, Ricky Barnes. There's a few guys out here that have been cool. So, but that's super helpful to have, you know, some veteran guys that kind of show you the ropes a little bit. Definitely.
How many guys are you comfortable with saying out there are longer than you are?
I would say probably DJ and Gary Woodland. I played with Gary on Tuesday last week, just kind of randomly. I was going to play the back nine, and he was on the tee, and we played together. I definitely think those guys have a little bit more extra on me than their regular cruising speed. So I would say those guys.
Do you have, when you're on like a normal tee shot for you, or one that you can kind of free swing at, are you going 100% of that, or do you have like an extra gear that you only go to in certain situations?
I would say it's kind of situational and almost kind of subconscious. Like if there's a, like that drive on 18, the third round, I mean, I knew that it was a pretty good carry over the corner. I wasn't thinking of swinging all out, but I think it kind of gets me into that mode, you know, and it just kind of comes out of me. So, but yeah, I mean, I would say I pretty much swing 100% on driver most of the time on the golf course. I just feel like I hit it straighter that way. I've always felt that way in my career. When I'm going full speed with driver, it's going to be a better swing for me, just moving my body well and being aggressive. If I need to take yardage off, I'll do full swing 3-wood, or like choke up and tee it down in a driver and still swing full speed. So that's kind of the way I go about that.
Okay. It seems to be there's a bit of change in the way in a lot of things in golf currently. The European Tour is changing all kinds of events, doing all kinds of crazy new stuff. At least one PGA Tour event is changing with the Zurich Classic going to a team event. And then this week, the USGA and R&A announced major changes in the rules of golf. What's a change that you'd like to see either on the PGA Tour or maybe within the rules?
I think rangefinders would be great. I feel like it would speed up play so much.
That's in the new rules. So many other... That's in there.
That is in there.
Yeah, it's in the proposed new rules. I think they're still pending approval of that. But yeah, the distance measuring devices are allowed there.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's one that I agree with. I feel like, you know, if we're trying to speed up play in tournaments, that would eliminate a lot of time. I know the caddies probably would object to that. You know, because that's a big part of their job. But at the same time, there's a bunch of other factors that the caddies are helping players with on the golf course. So, you know, I feel like the game has changed so much, and rangefinders have become such a big part of the game that that's kind of a logical step.
Have you seen all the detailed new rules? Are there any of them that you disagree with, if that's the case?
I didn't look super close on all of them, but the ones that I saw, I thought made a ton of sense. Having just penalty areas simplifies it. Being able to tap down spike marks. I mean, if a guy like can't pick up his feet in front of you and there's a huge spike mark on your line, I think that's totally fair to be able to tap that down.
Yeah, I just saw some of criticism from players on some of the on the spike mark rule, and that I think I never heard of this. Some on the European Tour several years ago, they tried something like that, and guys were taking advantage of it and kind of fixing stuff near the hole that might help it guide it towards the hole. And do you foresee any of that kind of being a problem?
You know, it's a game of honor.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that, and I think that's kind of something that's another proposed rule where, you know, if at the time the players in the group and everyone decide that a drop or where a ball crossed is correct, that, you know, you then can't go back and look at video evidence and stuff and say, oh no, you're lying, like that's not right. So I think that kind of goes along the same lines of, you know, we all believe that we're honest with each other when we play on tour, and you know, that I would hope that that would not happen.
Right. So a week like this where you're off, how much do you or do you look forward to going to the golf course to practice, or even, you know, as a young player, do you already view golf more as a job?
Yeah, I mean, I really look forward to going to the golf course every day. I mean, I wake up pretty early. I'm a morning person for sure. I usually get a workout in pretty early before I get to the golf course. So, you know, that kind of gets me going. And then, I mean, for me, you know, there's lots of little goals along the way. But, you know, I feel like if you're in this profession, you know, playing professional golf, your goal should be to be number one in the world. And, you know, every day I wake up with that in the back of my mind, and that's kind of what I'm working towards. So that has to get you jacked up to get to the golf course.
Have you ever experienced burnout of any kind in your golf career?
I would just say last year was the first time where I played so many events in a row, like in the middle of the country where it was like 95 degrees, 90% humidity, where yeah. My feet and body were just a little tired after all that tournament golf. So it's interesting when people are like, what hurts after four or five tournaments in a row? And my feet are what end up hurting, because this, and I'm sure other players feel the same way. It's like so much walking. You know, people don't think about it. I mean, it's like 6 miles a day on the golf course, not even counting the practice rounds. You know, it's like 50 miles a week of walking. It's a lot. I would just say, playing on the PGA Tour has to get you jacked up to go out and play. So it's I really haven't had that much burnout. That was just more of a fatigue situation last year.
Yeah, I think the PGA Tour, once you get to that level, it's a little easier to look past any possibility of burnout. But I know that there's a lot of kids that grow up playing the game that are really focused hard on the game, want to play it professionally, and spend a lot of their childhood yeah. practicing and playing and traveling for tournaments and whatnot, and can experience burnout at times. I know I grew up with some guys that traveled the country and eventually did burn out. Part of that was due to lack of success. So it's but I just find it interesting to talk to guys on how much they wait when they wake up, how much do they look forward to going to the course. I think it's good, very key at the early part of your career that you do still enjoy getting up and going to the course. But obviously when you do it for several years, I think perspectives will at least change at some point on certain things. But
sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say for me as a kid, I think the biggest thing for me is I played other sports.
Yeah.
I played football and basketball through my freshman year of high school. So it was kind of, I guess I was a little bit of a late bloomer in that sense, especially compared to nowadays where, I really didn't start playing my national junior, competitive stuff until sophomore year of high school, which is very late compared to some of these, yet really, really young kids that are playing tournament golf. So I think I was kind of pretty hungry at that point to really try and get better. So that's a big factor. So, my advice would be to have your kids play other sports as long as possible.
Looking forward for the rest of the season, are there specific goals you have in mind, or are there particular courses that you're looking at, like with eyes wide open, that you're excited for?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would like to win this year. That's a goal for me. In terms of courses, I'm really looking forward to Bay Hill. I got a spot into that tournament in a couple weeks. I played 2 years ago. I think that course really suits my game. I like courses where the longer you hit it, the wider you get it, and the more hazards you take out of play, which is the case at Bay Hill on a lot of holes. that's a course I'm looking forward to. I honestly was really looking forward to Tampa, but it doesn't look like I'm going to get into that tournament. I Mondayed into that event last year. I thought that was a really great course. So I think some other courses that we got coming up, the majors, if I can get into them. I basically just like the courses as difficult as possible. I know Quicken Loans is on a challenging course. I've watched that on TV, and that seems like a course that would suit me well. I'd say that those ones.
All right.
Off the top of my head.
Any bettors listening, whatever the odds, we're putting on at Bay Hill. So we'll get you out of here on this one. What's your go-to snack on the course when you got to eat out on the golf course? What do you eat?
PB&J, 100%. I make them. Last year, my caddy was all about making the perfect PB&Js. This year, I've been making them. PB&Js, that's the key to distance.
Never the Uncrustables, right? Like they have to be homemade.
No. You can't cut corners like that.
That's
pun intended.
Only for the dog legs. All right, Brandon, I'll let you out of there on that. Thank you for your time, man. I know you got to get to the course and practice, but we look forward to continuing to following you. And it's been a goal of mine to get. I needed to get you on here before you won a tournament, and I got a little bit scared, I'm not going to lie, when I saw you like up in the top five at some point last week. So,
yep.
Best of luck with the rest of the season. Are you going to be playing the Memorial? Do you know?
Hopefully.
Okay.
Hopefully I'll play my way in. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, look forward to maybe we can catch up over a beer there. And if not, we'll meet sometime in the future. So thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, talk to you guys soon. See you.
Cheers.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!